Berkeley-based group International Rivers got some good news recently. The 26-person nonprofit won the coveted MacArthur Foundation Prize for working to oppose dams and help people around the globe find alternative energy sources. The group has fought dam projects in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. They say dams displace millions of people globally, have huge impacts downstream, and lead to environmental degradation. So on today's Your Call, we'll mark International Day of Action for Rivers by discussing the effects of dams around the globe and grassroots activism. Join us after the news.
BBC News with David Austin. Pope Francis has celebrated Mass in the Sistine Chapel for the first time since being chosen leader of the Roman Catholic Church. He said little in his homily to reveal his vision for the Church, but the BBC Vatican correspondent says the Pope's language and style was simpler and more down-to-earth than has frequently been the case with his predecessors. Alan Johnston has more.
This Mass draws to a conclusion the conclave from which Cardinal Bergoglio emerged as Pope. Back beneath the Sistine Chapel's famous frescoes, he joined the men who voted for him there just yesterday. The Pope delivered the homily himself. Speaking without notes, he conjured an image of life as a journey on which believers had to strive meaningfully to build the Church.
The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has expressed its hopes for better relations between Islam and Christianity under Pope Francis than was the case under his predecessor, Pope Benedict. The head of the organization said in a letter of congratulation to the new pope that he hoped for cordiality and sincere friendship. Earlier, the leading center for learning for Sunni Muslims, the Al-Azhar University in Egypt, said it also wanted to see better relations between the two faiths. An Al-Azhar spokesman said the university was ready to resume dialogue. A series of coordinated bomb and gun attacks have hit Iraqi government buildings in Baghdad. At least 22 people have been killed. From Baghdad, Rami Ruhayem has more details.
Multiple blasts were heard clearly across central Baghdad, and news quickly came out that the Foreign, Culture and Justice Ministries had been struck. A report on Iraqi television said government forces killed an unspecified number of gunmen inside the Justice Ministry, and that the building had been evacuated. Earlier, reports suggested that the gunmen entered the ministry after a car exploded at the gate.
The South African health minister says nearly 30% of schoolgirls are HIV positive, compared with just 4% of boys, because older men are exploiting the girls. Aaron Matsualedi said it was clear that the girls were not having sex with boys their own age, but with men whom he described as sugar daddies. Richard Hamilton reports.
Mr. Motsoaledi said the large number of young girls who were HIV positive, in his words, destroyed his soul. He quoted some disturbing statistics. Nearly 100,000 schoolgirls became pregnant in 2011, and nearly 80,000 of them had abortions in hospitals or clinics. He urged South Africans to take a stand against older men who were, as he put it, destroying our children. Mr. Motsoaledi has been praised for his efforts in curbing HIV. Since President Zuma appointed him as health minister 4 years ago, South Africa has run the largest antiretroviral program in the world.
World News from the BBC. The worst offending countries involved in the illegal ivory trade have been given a strict deadline to improve the situation or face sanctions. The decision was taken on the final day of a major international conference on regulating the trade in wildlife species held in the Thai capital, Bangkok. Danny Eberhardt has more.
The body that regulates the wildlife trade, CITES, has singled out 8 countries for particular attention. These include the nations where most illegal ivory ends up, China and Thailand, but also 3 African states where elephant poaching is a serious problem, Kenya, Tanzania and Uganda, and 3 major transit states, Malaysia, Vietnam and the Philippines. 6 have submitted plans to tackle the problem, but CITES says all 8 could be sanctioned if action isn't taken by 2014.
The Indian Supreme Court has issued a restraining order to prevent the Italian ambassador from leaving the country. The order against the ambassador, Daniele Mancini, came after Italy refused to send back two of its marines who've been charged with the killing of two Indian fishermen last year. Italy insists the deaths occurred in international waters and are therefore not subject to an Indian court. India disputes this claim. The Prime Minister of Kosovo, Hashim Thaci, says talks to normalise relations with Serbia have entered their final stage. He was speaking after a meeting with the European Union Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton, who, however, was more cautious. She highlighted the outstanding problem of northern Kosovo, where ethnic Serb communities have refused to recognise the authority of Pristina since Kosovo declared independence from Serbia in 2008. Indonesia is seeking to ward off further price rises for one of its staple foodstuffs, garlic. The government says it'll be issuing import licenses for up to 135,000 tonnes of garlic from China. Prices have risen sharply from $4 a kilo to $10. BBC News.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today is International Day of Action for Rivers. Over 125 actions are taking place in 35 countries around the globe. The group International Rivers is taking part in today's actions. They recently won a prestigious MacArthur Foundation Award for working to oppose dams and helping people around the globe find alternative energy sources. According to the group, roughly two-thirds of the world's rivers have suffered harm from the 50,000 large dams that have been built over the past century. They say that decisions about managing rivers are too often based on an incomplete understanding about how ecosystems in the watershed function. Combined with the lack of transparency that darkens the dam planning process in so many countries, this can lead to projects that do more harm than good. They can devastate fisheries, impact habitat for animal and plant life, and also displace human populations along its shores. But there is also a movement toward dam removal. According to the group American Rivers, 65 dams were removed in the U.S. last year alone. So what do big dams do to communities and ecosystems? How do we balance the hydroelectricity benefits from dams with their harmful effects on surrounding people and ecosystems? We don't really spend that much time talking about this issue in the U.S., especially in Northern California. So what is happening when it comes to dams in the U.S.? Today we are joined by Kate Ross. She's Program Associate and Patagonia Coordinator with International Rivers. She says she's astounded by the strength and passion of the fight to defend free-flowing rivers and the rights of communities who depend on them. International Rivers is co-sponsoring the International Day of Rivers today, and it includes a number of events, and I'll just tell you about what's happening in this area. There is an event in Palo Alto at 7 o'clock tonight. There'll be a screening of the trailer for Damnation and a screening of the film Streams of Consequence. This is taking place at the Patagonia store in Palo Alto, 525 Alma Street. And then in San Francisco, the event starts at 7 o'clock at the Patagonia store in North Point, which is near Pier 39. And you can find information at yourcallradio.org. And Kate Ross joins us here in studio. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in and congratulations on the award.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Steve Rothert. Steve is director of American Rivers California Regional Office. Steve works on hydropower reform, fish restoration, dam removal, climate change, and water supply. He's also worked in southern and western Africa on river protection and hydropower reform. His favorite river is the North Fork of the American River in California. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So, Kate, let's start off with you. Your group, International Rivers, just won this amazing $750,000 prize from the MacArthur Foundation, and you're going to use the money to build your reserve and enhance your communications in your offices in Asia, Africa, and South America. When did you first find out about this prize?
So we actually found out, I think, back in October and you know, kept it under wraps until the announcement this past month. And we're very excited and honored for this opportunity and to be recognized for our work. And it's not only us, but the movement of organizations of grassroots communities and citizens that we work with around the world. So it really has been an exciting time and is a great honor and will help to contribute to a lot of our work moving forward.
And you're a fairly small organization, 26 people, yeah. The only Bay Area group to win this prize.
Yes, yeah, that was also really fantastic.
So today is International Day of Action for Rivers, and there's a number of events going on around the globe. I also wanted to talk briefly about this really cool project called Every River Has a Story. And you're asking people to write in with their stories about how rivers inspire, engage, and connect. What sort of response have you received so far?
Yeah, it's been a really wonderful project. We started sort of talking about this idea and around Day of Action for Rivers, but it's something that we're looking to continue. And the idea has been to gather river stories from around the world to talk to people about their own love of rivers, why they're working to protect these rivers, whether it's river activists, whether it's river lovers, people, you know, sports enthusiasts who love to kayak and spend time by the river. And we've had a really fantastic response to this call to action and have heard stories from around the world, from activists in Mozambique, in India, in Africa, and also throughout the U.S., which has been really wonderful.
Well, when we were putting the show together, we said, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about oceans, especially in Northern California. We don't spend that much time talking about rivers.
Yeah, I think there's wonderful rivers in the U.S. and throughout the world, and I think that Steve can also speak more to this, but the context in terms of rivers and dams in the U.S. is very different from the rest of the world at this point in terms of the conversations now are a lot about river restoration and river protection, but how can we be restoring our rivers and looking to the future and in the world? I guess, you know, in a lot of the countries in which we work in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, some of the world's largest rivers are still threatened by emerging dam projects. And, you know, one of the amazing things now is that everywhere where there is a large dam project planned, there is most likely a resistance movement.
Mm. Well, and talking about what's happening in this country, Steve, it's I didn't realize that according to your group, 65 dams were removed in the U.S. last year alone.
That's right. And that was one of the more active years. And over the last 20 years or so, about 1,100 dams have been removed across the country. And I would point to the removal of the Edwards Dam on the Kennebec River in Maine in 1999 that really began the dam removal movement in the United States. And quite a lot obviously has happened since then, including the largest dam removals just in the last year on the Elwha River in Washington State and also on the Condit River in Washington State. And although there have been, as I said, 1,100 dams removed in the last couple of decades, there are still more than 75,000 dams blocking rivers across the country, which is nearly a dam, on average, dam built every day since Thomas Jefferson was president.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what you mean by this. I mean, what's the scope of this? Who's behind it? Can you just give us a little more information about these dams?
Well, the Glynne's Canyon Dam on the Elwha River in Washington at 210 feet tall, and there have been several others that have been removed over 100 feet, but by and large, they've been in the range of 10 to 25 feet in height. And they have served hydropower purposes. They've been mill dams, particularly on the East Coast, where we've got a lot of historicized dams for a couple of centuries, and in many cases they've just fallen into disrepair and no longer serve the original function for which they were constructed, and in some cases even pose public dangers. You know, kids have lost their lives climbing on these decrepit dams, and in many cases those can be quickly removed when they're recognized as a threat like that.
What would you add to that, Kate?
I mean, I think that Steve really covered it. And, you know, it's been really interesting to see them actually, you know, at our events, we'll be showing the trailer for Damnation, which is a film about the dam removal movement in the U.S. and looks like it actually, I think, hasn't quite been finished yet, the full film, but looks very exciting in terms of illuminating a lot of these examples and speaking more about this movement and sort of the rehabilitation of rivers in the United States and the restoration and return to sort of their natural
state. Yeah, because what happens when a dam is removed, Steve?
Well, what we have seen routinely in the hundreds of dam removals over the last few years is that rivers are remarkably resilient. If they're given a chance to restore their natural processes, they come back very quickly and reproduce the habitat and the water quality that they enjoyed before they were dammed, and the fish that had been previously blocked by dams, in particular salmon and steelhead and those vigorous migratory fish, they know what to do. As soon as the dam is out of the way, they blast past it and go upstream as far as they can to enjoy their home waters and spawn where their predecessors did.
And we're talking about dams all across the country, California, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania. And according to your data, Steve, over 1,100 dams have been removed across the country since 1912. And most of these dams, about 800, have been removed in the past 20 years.
That's right. Over the last 20 years or so, there has been quite a lot of attention paid to these older dams that no longer make sense, that have outlived their utility, no longer serve the purpose for which they were built, and as I said before, have become dangerous. And what dam owners have come to realize in the vast majority of these cases involving dam removal is that it costs much more to keep them in place than it does to remove them, particularly when you consider some of the secondary benefits of improved water quality, improved fisheries, improved recreation, and the jobs and community well-being that those restored resources can bring.
And in the film Damnation, the trailer again will be screened tonight at the events, one of the voices in the trailer says that dams seemed like the best public works project during the Great Depression, and then says, but like all constructed things, dams have a finite lifetime.
That's right. I mean, if you're looking at the physical structure itself, the concrete that was used, the rebar and metal that was used, they have a lifetime of service. And because our country is now, you know, more than two centuries old, many of the structures that were built have simply run their course and outlived their sell-by date, and it's time to take them out.
We've got a question from Rob who says, some decades ago, Idaho Power and Light built three small dams along the Snake River instead of a single high dam. In this case, can your guests comment on this project, high dams versus smaller dams? And he goes on to say, in a broader sense, if dams are going to be built, is it better to build a series of small dams or single high dams? I really like that dams are being removed where they are no longer needed, and against projects like the Three Gorges dams and the one now proposed in Patagonia.
Well, my view is this is a very good question, and it's one that we get often. I would say that in some cases, smaller dams can be less harmful to rivers than big dams because, for example, on streams that support salmon and steelhead, a lower dam might be easier to get fish past by building a fish ladder or a fish way that could get fish around the dam, whereas a much taller dam in some cases might not be passable at all. However, even small dams still often completely block fish and other organisms. They disrupt the natural flow of water and nutrients and sediment and can still have adverse impacts on water quality. So but that's not necessarily the case in all situations.
Do you agree with that, Kate?
Yes, and I think that, you know, one of the examples that that he brought, the question brought up about, you know, well, Three Gorges is obviously an example of a huge, huge project and plans to build five dams in Patagonia. A lot of times with these projects, the cumulative impacts are not taken into account. You know, one example would be in the Mekong. Currently, there are plans to build 11 dams on the Mekong mainstream. And if all of these dams were built, it would really be the death knell for the very productive fishery in this region, a river which, you know, more than 60 million people are dependent on for their food security. And when you're looking at simply one dam, you don't, you know, it's sort of, we see it as a domino effect, really. You build this one dam and that not only opens up sort of the corridors for future dams to be built, but then you need to look at the cumulative impacts of how all of these structures will affect the river as a whole and the people who depend on it.
All right. Well, thank you again for the comment, Rob, and we will take your show idea about the Pebble Mine proposal in Bristol Bay Estuary in Alaska into consideration. Thanks so much for that. We have another question about dams. Are there any good dam projects? Are there examples of projects that have actually benefited local communities? Kate, have you seen any dams around the world that have benefited local communities?
I think that, you know, in general, one of the main things that we look at is sort of how these large dams do directly impact communities and indirectly impact communities as well as the environment. And unfortunately, in the majority of these cases, it's really the people who are directly affected that don't get any of the, whether it's hydroelectric, you know, benefits from these projects. It's, you know, more than 80 million people in the world have been displaced by these dams, and often these are indigenous communities. Mm-hmm. And studies and history have shown that they usually end up worse off, in worse living conditions, you know, deprived of their livelihoods. And these are also the same people who are left out of the decision-making process.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. I mean, I think that throughout Latin America, there are projects where we've seen this. I mean, I think that actually in, you know, the Three Gorges Dam, which was brought up, is, you know, is a sort of historic example of a hugely destructive dam project, which displaced millions of people. And really, you know, the Chinese government themselves admitted that it's a bad project, and that, you know, the impacts have been huge.
And Steve, how would you answer that question?
Well, I would say, I mean, if you look at California, you cannot deny that dams have provided much of the water supply that the state relies on, and provides approximately 15% of the energy that we consume here in the state. But it's also true that when many of these dams were built, there wasn't nearly the understanding of how dams impact rivers and how dams can be built and operated to minimize or avoid impacts. And if you just look at the Sierra Nevada mountain range, for example, every one of the main or major rivers flowing out of the Sierra have massive dams, terminal dams at the inflection point where the rivers start flattening out, or before they start flattening out into the valley, and not one of them provides passage for salmon and steelhead back into their upper watersheds in the Sierra. And as a result, we've seen, you know, upwards of 90% of the habitat that salmon and steelhead used to enjoy lost to dams like these. And so while the dams do provide water and they do provide power, they do so in a very destructive way.
And that is Steve Rothert. He's director of American Rivers California Regional Office. He works on hydropower reform, dam removal, climate change, and water supply. And last year alone, 65 dams were removed in the United States. Nearly 800 were removed in the past 20 years. We're also joined today by Kate Ross. She's program associate and Patagonia coordinator with International Rivers. This is a Berkeley-based group. They recently won the coveted MacArthur Foundation Award, the only group in the Bay Area that won this award. And they work to oppose dams and help people around the globe find alternative energy sources. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about rivers and dams? And what do you want to know about the effect dams have on people and ecosystems? As Kate just said, 80 million people have been displaced by dams, mostly in indigenous communities. And if dams have affected you, if you're from an area of the world where there are major dams and you'd like to share your story about what changes you've seen, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. And if you make your livelihood from a river, what do you think of dam projects? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or better yet, leave a comment on our website so everybody else can see it at yourcallradio.org. org. And then we have another question going back to the smaller dams. Steve, why don't you take this one first? Has there been progress in creating dams that are smaller or better designed so they don't take such a toll on the environment or the people living in the area?
We have learned quite a lot about how to minimize the impacts of dams. And I would just point to a couple. One is related to fish passage and the advances that have been made to designing methods for fish to get over or around dams, fish ladders and natural fish ways that look like streams but sort of circumvent the dam. And we've also come to understand how to better operate dams such that the downstream impacts are minimized or are lessened. And by and large, what that means is, for us anyway, it's called run of river, which would operate a dam such that the outflow of the dam is the same as the inflow. In other words, the dam doesn't disrupt or modify the flow of the river very much, and that allows for the important natural highs and lows that rivers typically experience, particularly in California, to continue. And that's those are the flow patterns that fish and other organisms in the river have come to have evolved in and depend on. So there have been some advances, but there's just some unavoidable impacts that dams create that we will never be able to get around.
And what about climate change? Lori just writes in saying, how will dams fare in a changing climate? And what should we be doing to prepare dammed rivers for climate change? Kate, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we know now is that really dams are not the right answer to our changing climate and to our changing rivers. We depend on healthy rivers for so much in our lives, and especially for the well-being of our planet, and they will be even more important given the changing climate. I think that often, you know, one of the biggest things with dams is that they are risky, especially given given climate change and what we know so far and what we don't know about how the changing climate will affect rivers' flows. One of the possibilities is that, climate change we've seen has contributed to droughts, which would mean that dams are a lot more inefficient and uneconomical. The other side is that they can create large floods, which can lead to very dangerous situations for dams, whether it sort of leads to too much stress on a dam so that it has to release a larger flow, which can create floods downstream, or, you know, even the potential to destroy the dam itself.
You highlight an article on your Facebook page, and this is something that really, I didn't even think about this in putting the show together, but there's violence against women, for example, at Brazil's, quote, Green Dam. So there's a lot more to this than just what happens with the dam itself and the environment. There's also something that goes on with the people involved in these projects.
Absolutely, and that is a huge part of what we work on, and in terms of working within this movement of people around the world who are fighting to protect their rivers, they're fighting for their lives and their livelihoods, and, you know, that's something that today, the International Day of Action for Rivers, really helps to amplify the voices of thousands of people around the world. And I think, you know, the article that you're alluding to, and we just celebrated International Women's Day last week, and we actually did, as part of our Every River Has a Story project, we highlighted some of the really incredible female activists in this movement. And I don't know if Kayleen is calling in later, but
we'll probably hear from Kayleen Sisk, chief of the Winneman Wintu tribe, who's dealing with this in the Shasta area.
Yeah, absolutely. So she, you know, is one of those stories that we highlighted anyway. And I think, as you said, you know, women are often some of the most affected by these projects and in indigenous communities, and it's important to recognize that.
Yeah, hold that thought. Let's talk about this more. more, because I think this is really important. Today we are marking International Day of Action for Rivers. Kate Ross is with International Rivers, and they recently won a prestigious MacArthur Foundation Award for their work opposing dams. They also help people around the globe find alternative energy sources, and we will talk more about a lot of the women that are involved in these movements around the globe right after the break. Steve Rothert is director of American Rivers California Regional Office. 65 dams were removed in the U.S. last year alone, including dams in California. And if you have any questions about dams and what their effect is on people and ecosystems, we'd love to hear from you. And if your community has been affected by dams, we'd love to hear your story. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Francisco, we invite you to join today's program by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email a question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we will discuss the wall-to-wall media coverage of the newly elected Pope Francis. What stood out for you? And we'll also talk about his past in Argentina. We will also speak with investigative journalists who used Freedom of Information Act requests to break stories about rising pension costs in Sonoma County and millions of dollars in hidden assets in the state parks system as the state was preparing to close 70 parks. We'll have a few journalists on who recently won the James Madison Award from the Society of Professional Journalists in Northern California, doing really great investigative reporting. That is tomorrow. And then on Monday, we are going to mark the 10-year anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. It has been 10 years. On Monday, we'll be joined by Iraqis talking about their reflections 10 years later. What is life like for Iraqis? And then on Tuesday, we will talk about the costs of the invasion occupation, and we'll kind of take a look back at history and how we got here in the first place. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are marking International Day of Action for Rivers, and there are over 125 actions taking place in 35 countries. In Palo Alto, there's an event tonight at 7 o'clock at the Patagonia store, 525 Alma. There's going to be a screening of a trailer for the forthcoming film Damnation. There will also be a screening of Streams of Consequence. This film is about the campaign to stop five proposed dams in Patagonia, Chile. And then the films and the trailer will also be shown at the Patagonia store in San Francisco tonight at 7 o'clock. It's in North Point near Pier 39, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Steve Rothert, Director of American Rivers California Regional Office. Since, actually, in the last year, over 65 dams were removed, and communities in 19 states were involved in these projects. We're also joined by Kate Ross, Program Associate and Patagonia Coordinator with International Rivers. They are a Berkeley-based group. They recently won the prestigious MacArthur Foundation Award for working to oppose dams and work with communities on the ground around the globe. And you can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. And before we get to calls, my computer just crashed, so we'll get to calls in just a minute. But I wanted to ask you, Kate, to elaborate on this a bit, because we were just talking before the break about all of the women that are involved in this movement. And I just want to read the intro from this piece, Violence Against Women Rampant at Brazil's Green Dams. 34 girls and women, including a 16-year-old teenager, were trafficked from the southeastern state of Paraná, Santa Catarina, and Rio Grande del Sul to a construction camp outside of the town of Altamira in the Amazon. They were forced to prostitute themselves for cash to become sex slaves to the men building the Belo Monte, Brazil's, quote, greenest dam. How common is this?
Well, I mean, I think that in terms of what I, you know, a lot of times we may not know how often this is going on, but I think, you know, this is obviously a shocking case and has recently been coming out more in the press. And Zach, who wrote about this from International Rivers, you can read more on his blog as well. And I think that, you know, one of the aspects in many of these, the, you know, there's corruption and violence and crime in some of these situations. I think, you know, it's also important to sort of highlight the women in the movement, mm-hmm. Who are fighting to protect their rivers and their livelihoods and their families. And I had the opportunity to meet a group of these women actually 3 years ago when I was at a meeting in Mexico, which International Rivers helped to arrange. It was the third meeting of dam affected people and their allies, which took place in Temocapulin, Mexico. And at this week long meeting, which involved about 350 activists from around the world, we actually had a women's session where it was solely women, all of the women from this meeting, from all over the world, who came together to talk about their own experiences with rivers, you know, how a lot of times how much they had struggled and how hard it had been for them to, you know, whether it was sort of seeing their home go underwater and disappear, or whether it was taking to the streets and, you know, coming up against probably largely male-dominated governments, or, you know, it was a really, really emotional and an amazing session. And I think that coming out of that, you know, we realize that this is something that we need to be talking about as well, and that it's a key part in so many struggles, I think.
Yeah, it's such an important point. And as this piece points out, these dams attract hundreds of thousands of male laborers to areas with failing social services, massive gender inequality, ingrained corruption, a pretty bad legal system, and this often leads to violence against women.
Right.
So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And we'll get some links from you after, because it'd be great to read about some of these women working on these projects.
Cool.
We have our connection back. So let's go to Suzanne in Berkeley. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for a great show today. What an important topic. I hope that either Kate or Steve could talk a little bit about the way in which hydro dams are often positioned in, particularly in Southeast Asia, as a source, a renewable energy source, a clean energy source, and that, unfortunately, that isn't the reality. We know that, for example, the concrete used to build them emits a tremendous amount of carbon, and there are all kinds of downstream threats to the communities that are directly impacted by these hydro dams, some of which you've already mentioned, particularly around food security. Mm-hmm. But just the whole idea that this is a renewable and clean energy source, I think, needs to be challenged. And I don't think that's something that in California, for example, that we would be immediately aware of.
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you so much. Sure. Kate, why don't you talk about that? There's an argument made in favor of dams for hydropower.
Right. And I think that, you know, this is obviously something that we work a lot on, which is to try and dispel this myth that really dams are clean, green energy, you know, and we actually, there's a fact sheet that, you know, I can link you to afterwards on our website as well. And I think that part of our work in Southeast Asia as well has been to highlight alternatives to these large dam projects, which are planned on the Mekong, as you said, Suzanne, and we put together actually an alternative study, which would create the same amount of power for Thailand that these dams are proposed to do. And I think that, you know, it's key in terms of addressing the question of hydropower as really not being a clean energy. You know, we know now, and I think that the U.S. and Stephen talked, this is an example of where we've learned from these examples. And as alternative renewable energies develop, as the technologies develop, the prices go down and they become much more viable options.
And Steve, what would you add to that? The question about hydropower and clean green dams.
Well, I think, as Kate said and the caller suggested, that hydropower really isn't as clean and environmentally friendly as the vast majority of people believe it is, because of the impacts that were mentioned just now, and also because of the direct and indirect impacts that the dams have on rivers, whether it's recreation or water quality or the fishery, commercial and tribal and recreational fishery. They're all adversely impacted by dams, even the best operated dams. And so I think people just need to be more aware of that in when they think about the fuel sources that are discussed in these energy debates.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Suzanne. We have a somewhat related question from Molly in Monterey. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was the perfect. Suzanne's question was perfect. My question, if either of your specialists there know about any information about, apparently there's a mill town up in, I think, Washington State that Google took over the hydropower for a town of 18,000 people, and all of their, you know, energy use and so on is proprietary, apparently, but for one of their data centers. And I'm curious about if either of your people know about that and if there's any further information about it. And one of my concerns about the whole technological delusion is that that they are putting out huge amounts of heat into the atmosphere with Google, but that's sort of an off topic. But I was just curious in this one instance.
All right. Thank you. Steve, have you heard about
this?
I am not familiar with the case the caller brings up. I'm sorry. I haven't heard of that.
I haven't either. Have you, Kate?
I haven't. I'm sorry. But it would be interesting to hear more.
Yeah, I'm actually looking for it, and I can't really find much. But
yeah.
Sorry about that, Mary. We will, or Molly, we'll take a look and try to find a link and put it on the website. Okay, thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Mary in Carmel Valley. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I was very interested to hear Kate Ross say that they are soliciting stories about the river from people. We just, in Carmel Valley, published a book of just that, and it's called Passion for Place. You can go passion4place .net. And I really feel, I mean, it's an amazing book because it's people writing about their experience, all different kinds of writing, and it's artists and photographers, you know, illustrating, published by a local group. And I really feel, and it's starting to, the readings that we've been having with it, one is going to be on River Day, incorporating the readings from the book at the river. And it encourages me, when I read the different stories, to remember mine. It educates people. It's a phenomenal way of drawing the community together around their watershed. So I encourage you to do that, and I'd love to be able to link with your organization and what we're doing here. You know, we're thinking about maybe making it an ongoing newsletter so that people can continue to give forward their stories and their experiences with the river.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mary. That's really wonderful to hear, and it would be great to link that. I'd love to connect that to our stories page, which you can find on our website, but also maybe we can get in touch after the show. But as you said, it's been really wonderful for us through this project, which is also sort of, you know, we're just starting out and hoping to continue and gather more stories. It's been really wonderful to hear so many unique voices, and people have such distinct and personal experiences with their own rivers in so many different ways. And I think, as you said, even and when you hear these stories, it encourages you to share your own and to think about your own stories. And that's definitely been true even within our own staff and in thinking about sort of what has led us to this place and what our own stories are. So thank you very much for sharing that.
And Rose, if I could follow on Mary's project there in her backyard in the on the Carmel River, the San Clemente Dam, which is a 75-foot high dam that has been providing water for the local communities there, is in the process of being removed. It's filled up essentially with sediment, and the state Division of Safety of Dams has deemed it unsafe due to seismic risk. And so state and federal agencies and conservation groups like American Rivers are in the process of completing designs for the removal of that dam, which will get underway in earnest next summer. I think some initial work will be started this summer in preparation for the big project next summer.
All right. Well, thank you again for the call. We have an email from Hana Baba, who hosts our Cross Currents show on KALW News, and she was recently in East Africa and said she talked to people about electricity, and she wonders to what extent river activists like yourselves realize that the importance of dams to people in parts of countries where electricity is non-existent. There's a new dam on the Nile in Ethiopia that's been celebrated, and another in Sudan. She says, of course, displacement is a problem, but it's one I only hear about from activists that are overseas. If you're campaigning against dams, what viable alternatives do you have to governments in Africa, for example? Frankly, many people she spoke with said that white and expat activists care more about rivers than the people. She says she's heard this many, many times, and she'd love for you to comment. What are your thoughts on this, Kate? Because International Rivers do work in Africa.
We do work in Africa, and I think that one of the projects that she's referring to is the Gibe III Dam, which is planned in Ethiopia. And this is a project that we do work on, and we work with other international organizations as well. And, you know, one of the very difficult aspects of working in Ethiopia is that a lot of people cannot speak out against this project, and, you know, and it's a very repressive government, and they wouldn't... you know, they would be in danger if they were to, you know, to sort of speak out against this project. I think that, you know, in a lot of the countries in which we work, and I think one of the important things about any of these or many of these struggles is that it's often the people most impacted are often those who are not included in any of these processes. I think, as I said earlier, you know, and one of the important things to remember is that, and what we're trying to work towards are more transparent processes in any of these project developments, and that really the voices of people are heard, and that the cumulative impacts, both environmental and social, are taken into account. I think, you know, in terms of alternatives, the first thing that we would propose is energy efficiency. It's a much cheaper and cleaner and faster in terms of going online option than any other alternative technology.
And so do you have people on the ground? I'm sure there are local community activists working on the ground. Do you have people in Ethiopia, for example?
We don't. People are not. So we have an office in South Africa. Mm-hmm. A lot of our work in Africa also happens within our Berkeley office. And there are not really community. It's not really possible for, you know, community organizations to be operating in Ethiopia.
Right. And Steve, you want to jump in there?
I was just going to add, I used to work for International Rivers in Southern Africa for 4 years.
Oh, right.
And what I saw there and what I learned about other projects through my work with International Rivers around the world is that in many cases these large dams are sold, promoted as means to deliver energy to rural communities and the poor, when in fact the vast majority of the energy produced goes to aluminum smelters or large industrial complexes or the cities and the communities that are displaced, who might still live within sight of the dam or the reservoir or their village that's now inundated by the dam, and they have power lines going over their heads, still do not receive power from those projects. So it's the idea that these dams are electrifying the rural countryside and providing lots of opportunities for communities to develop, in most cases, is simply not the case.
And what would you say to Hannah? Because she said she spoke with a lot of people who celebrated the dam in Ethiopia, and a lot of the locals say that they feel like a lot of these activists come in and, you know, do more for the rivers and don't really think about what's best for the people.
Well, I'm not familiar with that particular case, but what I saw when I was working there on the ground for years in Southern Africa is that in many cases, in the situations where dams were being planned and proposed, those villagers that would be moved were promised water, were promised power, and were promised other things, and then in other cases where the dams had already been built and the people had been moved, you talk to them, they are saying a very different story, that they were promised all these things and it was just never delivered. So I don't know that situation, but it could be that the promoters are trying to sell it by saying that they will get power and water and other things that may never be delivered.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you for the email, Hannah. It's really interesting to hear about what actually happens on the ground. So thank you for that. And today we're joined by Steve Rothert, Director of American Rivers California Regional Office. Kate Ross is Program Associate and Patagonia Coordinator with International Rivers. They just won a coveted MacArthur Foundation Award for their work opposing dams and helping people around the globe find alternative energy sources. Again, today is International Day of Action for Rivers. You can find information about the events in San Francisco and Palo Alto tonight at yourcallradio.org. And now I would like to welcome Christian Parreira to the show. Christian is a Brazil consultant with Amazon Watch. He has over 9 years of experience in the fields of international development and advocacy, focusing on social justice issues. And with Amazon Watch, Christian is working on a campaign against the proposed Belo Monte Dam in Brazil on the Xingu River in the state of Pará. Hi, Christian. Welcome to the show. Is Christian with us? Hello, Christian. Is he there? Hi, Christian.
Hello.
Sorry about that. Thank you for joining us from Paris. Give us an update on the Belo Monte Dam in Brazil. Where does it stand right now?
Yes. Well, I heard you refer to the dam earlier in this program as the Green Dam, and I understand Brazil has been pushing this image that this is a green project generating green energy, jobs, etc., when in fact it's very, very far from the truth. Belo Monte has been actually initiated, it was initiated in 2011 and has been moving forward very quickly in its construction since then. They're building coffer dams, which are these earthen dams, preliminary dams across the mighty Xingu River in the Amazonian state of Pará. This is a massive and incredibly powerful and beautiful river that sustains enormous biodiversity, many, many communities, indigenous communities, and it also is very important for the region's forests and, you know, the life in the Amazon. So the fact that Belo Monte is moving forward at this pace is a major problem for for the rule of law in Brazil. It's a major problem for the environment, for human rights, and unfortunately, everything that we've been doing, Amazon Watch works alongside International Rivers on this major campaign, because Belo Monte is among the world's most controversial projects. Everything we've done to highlight this huge controversy, working with Brazilian civil society organizations, working with indigenous peoples, local organizations, to call this project into question, has not stopped the Brazilian government from steamrolling forward with this project. So unfortunately, Belo Monte is advancing, but there fortunately is a lot of things you can say about resistance taking hold in the Amazon right now, pushing back against this project and many others like it that the Brazilian government is proposing for the Amazon, because this is one region in Brazil where there still are wild rivers, where there still are places that the government, the energy plants would say, hold huge energy potential. So there's a growing movement in Brazil to push back against this very destructive, catastrophic dam building boom that's befalling the Amazon. And I had the pleasure of speaking with my colleague who's in Altamira today and helped to organize a protest for the International Day of Action in favor of free-flowing rivers. They took about 40 activists down to the coffer dams on the Xingu River, and they unfurled banners. They were there to protest Bellomonci in general, but in particular to protest what they call the transposition system that is supposed to be allowing the free-flowing movement of boats back and forth across the dam, which is not working. It's just one more sign and one more signal of the criminal negligence of the dam-building consortium, Norte Energia, that is time and time again sidestepped its responsibility, its legal obligation to mitigate the huge environmental impacts that Bellomonci has.
And before we let you go, Christian, what are you hearing from indigenous communities and how are they organizing?
It's a very complex question in regards to Bellomonci because Bellomonci is having a huge impact on indigenous peoples all along the Xingu River. It's directly impacting two indigenous tribes, the Juruna and Arara. They have stood up repeatedly and said they have not been consulted. This is against the Brazilian constitution. It's against the rule of law in Brazil. And they have voiced their outrage and opposition to Bellomonci again and again. So Amazon Watch has worked very closely with these groups to bring their story to a large international public, to bring their voices to international fora, to have them be heard. Again, the Brazilian government has proven completely unsusceptible to these arguments, which are, you know, at the root of human rights in Brazil and in the world, where you have the native people who live on and depend upon these resources, the river, the forest, the fish that flow in the that swim in the river, the ability to use the river for transport, and you have these people being deprived of these incredibly important basic resources, being deprived of their ancestral territories because they will be driven off their lands by this project, in spite of what the Brazilian government says. And you see their outrage. You see also that they feel quite powerless in the face of this juggernaut that is the Brazilian government these days. However, they continue to rise up. They were in attendance in this protest today. They were representatives of these groups that I mentioned, fighting this project because they feel like it's has everything to do with their survival and respect for their people.
And we've got just about a minute left. Kate, final thoughts from you, just as, I mean, the population is exploding, the demand for energy is exploding. Where do you see this going in the future?
I mean, I think more than ever, rivers are still fundamental to our lives, to our livelihoods, and to the planet. Rivers are really the lifelines of our planet, and we need to be protecting them. And we need to be supporting the communities around the world who are fighting for their lives, their livelihoods, for free-flowing rivers, and for better understanding and inclusion in these processes.
And Steve, we actually do have about 30 seconds, so final thoughts from you.
I would just encourage folks to get involved in the many river restoration and protection efforts that American Rivers and our partners have going on in California and beyond, and more than ever before, there are opportunities for the public to participate in on the ground work and also in the bigger decisions about how to manage our very vital rivers.
Steve Rothert is director of American Rivers California Regional Office. Kate Ross is program associate and Patagonia coordinator with International Rivers. They just won the MacArthur Foundation Award. And Christian Parreira is a Brazil consultant with Amazon Watch. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
And be sure to check our website for events taking place to mark International Day of Action for Rivers. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar, and here's what's coming up on Your Call tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation about the wall-to-wall media coverage of the newly elected Pope Francis. We'll also speak with investigative journalists who used Freedom of Information Act requests to break stories about rising pension costs in Sonoma County and millions of dollars in hidden assets in the state park system as the state was preparing to close 70 parks. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.